Penny Hardaway joins us on Sports Byline. Point guard who played 14 years in the NBA, 6 with the Magic, 5 with the Suns, also with the Knicks and the Heat after being drafted in the first round and playing his college ball at Memphis State. And he has come home as he's now the head coach at the University of Memphis. Take me back. You grew up in Memphis. You played your high school ball there. You played your college ball there. But take me back to the neighborhood, Binghamton neighborhood.
Well, it was when I was growing up, there were a lot of gangs. There was a lot of violence going on. There was all kind of things going on. And the one safe haven that we did have was a community center that would allow us to come in and play basketball and do other things. And I gravitated towards basketball instead of the negativity that was going on in the neighborhood. So I just thank God that the community center was there and that we had the opportunity to be able to have sports instead of just being with the crowd that wanted to do all the negative things.
Penny, one of the things I've heard from other people that grew up in the urban area and had talent, played basketball, that the community that had some of those elements, when they recognized that somebody had talent and can go somewhere with that talent, they tended to protect them. Did you have a sense of that in your neighborhood?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they saw that I was a talented basketball player early on. And it became apparent to me that the guys in the neighborhood were more supportive than trying to get me to do the negative things that the other kids were doing. They wanted to push me towards greatness and not be involved with all the other things as a teenager in that neighborhood that you could get involved with that weren't positive.
Your first love was really football, but your grandmother said, no, you're not playing football.
Oh, absolutely. I was like a tweak as far as size. And even though I loved football, my grandmother wouldn't allow me to play. She didn't want me to get injured or hurt, and she vetoed that right away.
A lot of people don't know how you got the nickname Penny, and it was a result of your grandmother. Tell everybody the story.
Well, when I was born with kind of a copper complexion, a brown skin kid. And my grandmother, when I was born, she said I was pretty as a penny. And with her southern drawl, she would call me pretty. But with the way that she said it, it sounded like Penny. So I took Penny over pretty.
You were a high school star in that town. And then you went to what I said, Memphis State at that particular point. Did you want to go somewhere else or did you want to stay home?
Well, I thought about Arkansas University for a quick second, and I quickly changed my mind. My heart was in Memphis, even though I took a deep look into Arkansas because there were some Memphis guys there, Todd Bay, Corey Beck, Dwight Stewart, and those guys, but my heart was in Memphis. That's why I stayed home.
Yeah, it's interesting because you had a year in which you were academically ineligible, and I say that only because you wound up making the dean's list with a 3.4 grade point average as an education major, and education has been such a big thing in your life from that point on. What was it that turned the button for you?
Well, initially, I just didn't take the test seriously. I was not a great test taker when I was in high school. I didn't take the ACT serious. I thought that I could go in and just ace it, and never did. And got to a point where I had to sit out my first year. And when I got to college, you know, with all the support that you get from the academic advisors and whatever you need academically, they're going to help you. So that just kind of fit right in my little wheelbarrow. And I asked lots of questions, and I was very focused when I got to college. And the grade point average was there, and I started becoming a really good student. I really enjoyed college as well.
Penny, I know in 1992, I was in Portland, Oregon, when they named the Dream Team. And I know that you were on that select team of USA talent that scrimmaged against the 1992 Olympic team. Now, Mike Krzyzewski is a good friend of mine, and he has shared the stories about what those scrimmages were like. Give me your perspective since you were inside the building and on the floor.
Okay, it's funny because Grant Hill and I still talk about this whenever we see each other, and every time this is a topic of conversation. We were in the scrimmage, and we jumped on the Dream Team. I think it was like Magic Johnson, Karl Malone, John Stockton, maybe David Robinson and someone else. It was me, Chris Webber, Bobby Hurley, Rodney Rogers, and maybe Allen Houston on the floor at the time. And we just started going in on the Dream Team. And it got to a point where we got up like 10 or 12, and they started trying to play serious because they thought that we were serious, and they could not get back into the game. And when they weren't allowed to get back into the game, we just blew them out. They kept Michael Jordan on the sideline because they felt like, in my mind at that point, that, you know, they were going to say that we didn't have Michael on the floor, we didn't have this person on the floor. And, hey, you still, you're not talking about scrubs when you're talking about Magic Johnson, Karl Malone, David Robinson, and Josh Stockton and those guys. So it was our first scrimmage. We really beat them fair and square. We just caught them off guard. And then the next day they came back and pretty much demolished us just by playing a physical game. They just took it out of the next day.
That's exactly what Mike said. He said it was like war out on the basketball court in that first game. He said, but it was the best thing that those guys did, the best thing for us you could imagine, because the next day they came out and they were real serious about that. But he said it was like war on the court.
Yeah, you know, those are our idols, our childhood idols. And for me, playing against Magic Johnson, playing against John Stockton, you know, playing against Scottie Pippen, playing against Clyde Drexler and these guys, and these are guys I looked up to growing up. So, and then you talk about the bigs and Charles Barkley and David Robinson and those guys. We really wanted to show them that we could play. It was more of a respect thing why we played so hard, because we wanted to get the acceptance from those guys to say, okay, you belong here, you were picked here, and you belong here. So we ended up playing kind of energetic basketball because we wanted to show those guys that we could play.
You had your jersey number retired, number 25 at Memphis State, and then you forego your senior season and made yourself available for the 93 draft. How hard of a decision was that for you at the time?
You know, it was an emotional decision because I really enjoyed college. And we had just came off of a first-round loss to Western Kentucky that didn't really sit well with me. And I was really contemplating on coming back for my last season in college. But when they started telling me that I was going to be a top-three pick, I really couldn't take a chance on getting injured. And I felt like I had done some great things at the university for 2 years on the basketball court, and that it was time for me to go. But it wasn't like a quick decision and, okay, I know that I'm going to go. It took me a couple weeks, and then I decided, okay, I think I'm ready to go.
You know, it was interesting about draft day when you were drafted in 93. You were a first-round pick, third overall, by the Golden State Warriors, but then you were traded to Orlando for Chris Webber, who was the first overall pick. But how you impressed the Orlando Magic, tell that story. I find it fascinating.
You know, the first time I went to Orlando, there was no one to pick me up at the airport. I ended up getting a ride. There was a reporter that came that just did a story on me, and it was Stuart Scott, God rest his soul, from ESPN. He was the lone guy at the airport, and he ended up taking me to the hotel. I got connected with the Magic, and they took me over, and I went through, like, some, you know, high jump, shuttles, and really I just tried to compete as hard as I could to try to break all the records. I asked the strength coach every time, what's the record in this and push-ups? What's the record in this and shuttle? What's the record in the vertical leap? And I tried to be impressive that way, but we didn't play basketball. It was just really a quick trip. I went back to doing the movie Blue Chips, and I told Shaq, I was like, really, there was nobody really there? If I can get an opportunity to come back in and play basketball and show them, then whenever that could happen, let me know, and I'll go back down. And lo and behold, they flew me back down to get another look at me, and they put me in a 5-on-5 game, and they put Anthony Booty, going out of Oklahoma, who was a great defensive player, who would hold all the top guys around the league whenever the Magic played them. And I said to myself that I have to destroy this guy to get traded for the first pick. And I went into that 5-on-5 that day, and I was hitting on all cylinders offensively, defensively, getting good blocks, rebounding well, and I was finding people with assists on the other end. It was one of the best days I've had on the basketball court because I knew my livelihood depended on it for me to go to Orlando. And I just blew it out of the water. And I think that was the lasting impression that I left on them. And that's what eventually took me over the hump.
It certainly was a lasting impression, no doubt about that. The thing I remember when I broadcasted games that you were involved in was how tall you were for a point guard. I mean, at 6'7", that was like Magic Johnson tallness as well. What advantages did somebody like you at 6'7" have?
Well, my length. That's my best attribute. I mean, I had athleticism, I had speed, I had quickness, but you can't teach height. You know, and I heard that from my coaches all those years. But I use my length on guys. Defensively, I could play off you and make your life hard, you know, to try to shoot over me. And then you couldn't blow around me because I was fast enough and quick enough. So I gave them fits on the defensive end that way, and I played the passing lanes really well. And then offensively, I went to the post. Most guards can't play post defense. So I posted smaller guards up a lot, and I was very successful at doing so.
Yeah, you were the trigger man for Orlando, and you had Shaquille O'Neal there, and I was always fascinated by the blending of the two talents and the chemistry as well. What was the key to that?
Well, the key was to me, to our relationship, was me being humble and understanding that Shaq was our first option and I was going to be the second option. And I was going to be very successful as long as I knew that. And what made me successful was just understanding that he was the man and having no ego. And my game just flourished from just, you know, feeding off him.
And also, when you think about Scott Skiles, he was the guy, because you came in as a off guard, and he was the one that helped you with the transition to being a point guard, was it not?
Yeah, Scott was a true professional. He understood the handwriting on the wall when they drafted me. I came in as a point guard, but they played us together so he could groom me. And he was a great leader. You know, he was very professional. He was like a student of the game. I knew that he was going to be a coach one day by the way that he played. And he was no nonsense. He just didn't take anything off anybody. He was very tough. So he helped me out a lot as my rookie season before they ended up trading him to Washington.
You and Shaq in 94-95, you went to the NBA Finals against Houston, and really it didn't come out the way you wanted. But you averaged better than 25 points a game in that series. When you look back on that series, is there anything that bothers you about what happened and how the outcome was?
Yeah, that first game will always haunt us because, you know, during the regular season, we owned the Rockets. We beat them two times in the regular season, 20 points at our place and their place. And we had like a 16, 17-point lead in the first half. And I just remember the first half of that game, we just ended it wrong. We ended the first half wrong and gave them some momentum. And we went into the second half of that game, and it was a battle from that point forward. And at the end of the game, we all know what happens, but we gave them too much momentum going into halftime. And you can't do that in the NBA and give a team some breathing room.
In 96, I was in Atlanta covering the Olympic Games down there. And, of course, you were on the U.S. Olympic team. And the awe factor was still in place with other teams that were playing against the Dream Team, Dream Team 2. Did you guys sense that? I mean, what was it like on the floor going up against people that were really just blown away by you guys and the talent you had?
Well, absolutely. We were definitely fully aware of what was going on. A lot of the teams that we were playing against were fans of ours. We didn't think they were going to lay down, but we still had that intimidating factor amongst most of the teams where we could just we'd be up 20 before they knew it. And that was our advantage as NBA players playing against those guys.
You went on then to Phoenix and had a long stretch there and very productive stretch as well. And then injuries start to come into your career. And I'm just wondering, for an athlete that is particularly tuned to being healthy and playing at a high level, how hard is that to deal with? And is it more emotional or is it more mental, Penny?
It's very hard to deal with that because I went from being very athletic, fast, and quick with quickness to being slow and, you know, not being explosive. And that was the majority of my game. I had a brain, I could think the game, and I was athletic and fast enough to make you play in other areas. When the injury started happening, it was just it was too difficult to overcome. And it really bothers you mentally because every move that I tried to make, I couldn't push off, I couldn't explode, and I felt like a totally different person. And it was tough to play on at that level compared to what I was doing when I first got into the league.
Was it hard for you to walk away from a game that you had such great passion and talent for?
It was very hard, but my injuries kind of pushed me away. That's why I kind of hung in there longer. I think I hung in there about 4 or 5 years longer than I should have, but the love of the game kept me coming back. But I never could get over the hump. It was really hard walking away.
Penny, there are things that happen to athletes along the way about their career that stay with them. And I think in your case, it was the Nike advertising campaign, Lil Penny. Tell me a little bit about that and how you reflect back on it.
Well, I just remember Nike had an advertising agency called Wieden and Kennedy.
Right.
They came and approached me in a meeting asking me how would I feel about an alter ego. And I loved it right away. They said, we're going to name him Lil Penny. And he'll be talking all the trash while you're just out there playing ball. And I knew at that point that it would be a hit and it would be a success, and it's still a hit and a success today.
First of all, let me ask you about how you felt when you were called and they asked you to be the head coach at the University of Memphis.
It was, I know people use this word loosely, but it was definitely a surreal moment. I couldn't believe it was coming full circle. I didn't grow up dreaming to be the coach at the University of Memphis. I didn't have the thoughts in my mind when I was in the NBA, when I retired, I'm going to be a coach at Memphis. It really just happened. It was just kind of God sent. The timing was right. I was already coaching high school. I had coached middle school, and the timing was perfect, and I felt like I was ready for it. And just 2 years ago is when I really started thinking about coaching at the University of Memphis.
You know, you were very successful as the head coach in high school in Memphis as well, and I'm just wondering, everybody always talks about an athlete stepping up from college to the pros, and I'm just wondering, from a coaching standpoint, going from high school to college and coaching at that level, what's the step up?
The step up is really the grind of every day, making sure the kids are okay, making sure, and even though I did that in high school and college, the appearances that you have to do, the recruiting trail, you got to go on the road now, the travel. It's going to be some heartbreak thinking that you have a kid and you really don't. He chooses another school. I mean, all of that is going to come in and be more difficult for me because I've always had kids that wanted to play for me. They wanted to be there. And I love them. They love me. And now it's going to get, and I didn't have to recruit against anyone else. they were my kids. And now having to recruit against the rest of the nation. And like I said, the pain of thinking that you have a kid and the kid goes to another school, I think that's going to really crush me the most because I really buy into when I'm recruiting a kid to be all in.
Penny, I want to congratulate you on your fine career and also for the assignment now at the University of Memphis. You deserve it. I love doing your games and watching them during the course of my career. Take care, my friend. You're back. Welcome back here anytime on Sports Byline.
No, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Penny Hardaway with us as we continue on Sports Byline.